Good afternoon, gentlemen. We are reconvening once again. We're on Hayamud Beis in Ksubas, towards the bottom. Before we begin, I just want to share a quick thought with you. My Rosh Yeshiva of David Harris, Shlita Rosh Yeshiva of Yeshivas Chofetz Chaim in Queens, said an interesting idea. He quoted a Gemara in Makos that says that when Yehuda, the Shevet Yehuda, his bones were being brought back from Mitzrayim to Eretz Yisrael, as were all the bones of all of the sons of Yaakov, his bones were shaking and rattling around, and the reason was because he was in a cherem. He was sort of excommunicated. Why? Because he had accepted upon himself such an excommunication if he did not bring Binyamin back. When the brothers were going to go down to Mitzrayim to get food, Yaakov was hesitant to send Binyamin because maybe something will happen to him. And Yehuda accepted upon himself that if he doesn't bring Binyamin back, he would accept upon himself a certain excommunication. It would perhaps cost him his share of the next world. But in any event, it was an excommunication, which the Gemara says, we see from here, that such a cherem, or literally the term the Gemara uses is a nidui, that such a nidui that a person accepts upon himself conditionally is fulfilled even if the condition is not met, which is an interesting idea, but that was not the major point that Rabbi Harris was trying to bring out. He then showed that the Gemara says that Moshe Rabbeinu davened that Yehuda's bones should stop rolling. Why? Because he says Reuben's bones were not rattling around. And Reuben learned from Yehuda. In other words, Reuben did Shuva. Reuben, in fact, was the Gemara. It's brought down Reuben was of the inventors of Shuva. You know, there are other people who did Shuva first, but Reuben's was the first real Shuva. And Yehuda was the one who taught him to do tshuva. And because he learned from Yehuda how to do tshuva, it's not fair, it doesn't seem just that Reuben's bones should sort of be at rest, and Yehuda is, his bones are rattling because of the fact that he has this nidui upon him. So Tosfos on the spot asks the following question. Tosfos says, how is it possible that Reuben learned from Yehuda how to do tshuva? Chronologically, it doesn't seem to make sense. Reuben's tshuva occurred before Yehuda's tshuva. How do we know? Because Yehuda's tshuva that the Gemara is referencing is the tshuva that he did for the Maisa with Tamar, when Yehuda admitted and said the staff and the psil, whatever the items were that Tamar had taken from him, he admitted that those were his and that Tamar was pregnant from him. Excuse me. So those two items he admitted that were his, and therefore that was sort of his tshuva, his sort of admission of guilt. And then by that he was doing tshuva and repenting his sin. And the sin that Reuben was doing tshuva for was the sin of moving his father's tent away from Bilhah to Leah's tent. Because since Yaakov's sort of quote-unquote favorite wife, and that term should be taken with a grain of salt, his favorite wife, Rachel, had passed away, Yaakov took a certain measure of comfort by moving his tent to be together with Bilhah, who was Rachel's maid. However, Reuben felt that this was an insult to his mother, who was sort of more of a primary wife than the two maidservants were, even though the maidservants were also wives of Yaakov, and therefore moved Yaakov's tent to where Leah's tent was. And the Torah regards this sin with such severity that they actually refer to it as if Reuben had actually himself been together with Bilhah. Even though, of course, he wasn't. Nevertheless, that's the way the Torah views it. So, on account of that, Reuben felt that he had to do tshuva. And he did tshuva, and in fact, excuse me. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu Melech HaOlam, Shekel Nehi Eved V'Ra. And he did tshuva. And in fact, the tshuva was tshuva that he was involved in for many years. And again, Tosfos is asking this chronological question because he knows it happened before the event with Yehuda and Tamar. How? Because we know that when Reuven came to rescue Yosef from the pit, and the Pasuk does say that Reuven returned to rescue him from the pit, where was Reuven returning from? He was returning from having done tshuva. He had gone to the tshuva, and there he had come back to then rescue Yosef. But the event with Yehuda and Tamar happened after the sale of Yosef. And the chronology is pretty clear from all of Sukkim that therefore it would seem clear that Reuven was doing tshuva well before the event that Yehuda was doing tshuva for had even occurred. If so, how can it be that Reuven learned tshuva from Yehuda? And Tosfos answers that Reuven learned not the actual tshuva itself, but the admission publicly to say, I sinned, that aspect of tshuva is what Reuven learned from Yehuda. And it seems pretty clear that it's on account of Yehuda having sort of quote-unquote been the teacher of Reuven for this type of tshuva, that's what merited Yehuda's ultimate salvation and getting that nidui off of him and being able to enter Olam Haba in a normal fashion. And that was sort of Moshe's claim, that it was unjust until he came along and davened for it. It was unjust that Yehuda should be, his bones should be rattling, he should have this excommunication on him, and Reuven should not. So it comes out pretty clear from the Gemara that although Yehuda's own action of doing tshuva was in itself such a supreme act of total nullification of his own self and just admitting to God and saying, I was wrong, that action is not what merited his ultimate salvation. What really did it for him is the fact that he had caused, indirectly, without even trying to have an impact on Reuven, had indirectly shown and been an example, a model lesson for Reuven to follow in terms of the type of tshuva of admitting publicly. And Reuven subsequently, of course, did admit publicly his own sin. So if that's the case, it gives us a tremendous, tremendous idea that even with everything else that Yehuda had done, and the act itself of doing tshuva included among the many fantastic accomplishments of Yehuda's life, Yehuda still didn't merit his personal salvation until Moshe Rabbeinu sort of, obviously Hashem already knew, so it's unclear how what it means that Moshe Rabbeinu told Hashem about it. Of course Hashem knew already, but at the same time, somehow Moshe Rabbeinu's tefillah was able to sort of kiviyachol remind Hashem of this, and it wasn't the aspect of Yehuda doing the tshuva itself, but the fact that because of him, Reuven learned from it. Ultimately, one major point that we do see from the Gemara is that what's most important amongst our actions, and in Yehuda's case, what ultimately brought him salvation when he had none other, was the impact that our actions have on others. The type of hashpa that we have, the influence that we have on others, that's something which supersedes and goes above and beyond everything else that we may accomplish in our lifetimes. It gives us an idea of the value of the lessons that we impart to others and the model that we are to those who learn from us. What a responsibility it is upon us to teach them properly. Okay, so let us continue now in Ksubas. On the Hey Amad Beis, towards the bottom. When we last left off, we were discussing whether or not it's mutter or usser for a chassan and kal to be together for the first time on Shabbos. And we were discussing the various halachic aspects and the physical aspects, how we view the situation, whether or not it's a malacha on Shabbos, whether or not it's something that's usher to do on Shabbos. Right, essentially what's happening is that when the chassan and kal are together, the woman's hymen breaks and she bleeds. And there's a question of whether or not that action is a malacha. Of course, the obvious one would be that it's causing a wound, but there are other options as well, and the Gemara discussed them at various lengths. And the Gemara has sort of two lishonos, two different, I guess we could call it a flowchart, although it's of course a flowchart of words, not actually written in pictures. Sort of just step by step, how we view the situation. And with these various intin salomars, it sort of was a logical progression of how we view it. And at each stage, we found a new way how even if we view it in this particular way, which would seem to lend itself to saying that the halacha should be aser, nevertheless, there's still a tzad heter. There's still room to find a heter for the chasam and kala to be together, even within that world. Right? We said, for example, that even if we view it as... dam mifkid pakid, in other words, that the dam is just a reservoir, and therefore, if it's a reservoir, it would potentially be okay. Nevertheless, maybe you're building a door, right, so to speak. The door is obviously not literal in the sense that we normally think of a door, but in the sense of an opening, an aperture that you're creating, an orifice that you're creating in the woman that wasn't there before. Perhaps that is going to be something that makes it us on Shabbos. So I apologize, I misspoke. The first lashon of the Gemara that we already saw is one in which even if it would potentially be mutter, we found many, many tzadim to aser. Even if you would potentially say it's mutter because of this, still it might be aser. And so it comes out that it's most likely to be aser according to that first lashon. And just two important things that we should highlight before we move on is that we mentioned two machloks in between Reb Shimon and Reb Yehuda. Machlokas A was whether davar she'ein miskaven, something which is done unintentionally, is mutter according to Reb Shimon or aser according to Reb Yehuda. And the other machlokas, which we mentioned, which we're going to see in even greater light in this next lashon, was whether or not mekalkel is chayev or pater. Reb Yehuda holds mekalkel as pater, and Reb Shimon holds mekalkel as chayev. Now, when I say mekalkel as chayiv in Reb Shimon, that's only by certain melachos, such as chovel, causing a wound, or mavir, creating a fire. It's important to remember that because in the next lashon we're going to see that the melach of creating a wound has tremendous significance. Let's take a look at that. We're about 10 lines from the bottom of Hayam and Beis, where the Gemara says, Ikadamre. Ikadamre, there are those that say. V'imtim salomer dam chaburi mechber. And if you would want to tell me that we look at the dam as you're creating a wound. Now, the way this works is that the Gemara already asked the initial sort of two options, the initial two choices. Do we view the blood as being a reservoir or do we view the blood as being a wound? The way Rashi explained it is the blood absorbed in the walls of the womb and therefore... when the blood comes out, you're creating a wound? Or is the blood sort of sitting ready to come out other than the blockage which is in front of it, and when the man breaks through that blockage, then the blood comes out, and that, of course, would not be considered a wound. So now the Gemara is going to say, perhaps, that those that say that we look at it as being a wound, that the blood was, in fact, absorbed in the kosla harechem, in the walls of the womb. And now, if that's the case, intim solom adam chibur mechber, so if it's true that in fact it is a wound, v'dan hu tzarech v'aser, do we view it that he needs the blood? And if he's doing it to take the blood out and it's a wound, then it would in fact be aser. Odilma lahanas atzma hu tzarech v'shari. Or perhaps he's only doing it for his own benefit, and it would be mutter. And we saw briefly last time we were together that Tosfos discusses what exactly the tzarech would be for the blood. There's a couple options. One option might be that the man doesn't want to get dirty the next time, so to speak, so it's important to him to not have that blood there for the future. Another option might be that having the blood and seeing the blood shows him that she was in fact a virgin beforehand, and therefore it's important to him to see the blood, and it's not simply a function of his own pleasure. So those are the two choices that we gave now. And of course, if he's doing it to get the blood out, then in fact it is asur because of the fact that he's causing a wound, and his goal is for the wound itself, right? Getting the blood is obviously something that he is part of causing a wound. Or perhaps he's doing it for his own personal pleasure, and if it's for that reason, if that's his motive, then of course he's not actually doing it in order to cause a wound. Sort of a byproduct of the action that he's taking is that a wound is caused. But it's a side result, a corollary of his action, not the main result of what he's doing. And the Gemara says, "V'dama mela kasi," and if that's the case, it's just a side, a corollary of what he's doing. The blood, of course, comes, but it's not the major part. So the Gemara says, "The imtim salom alanaz atzma mutzar v'dama mela kasi," that of course the blood comes, but it's really his ikar goal is for himself. Halacha k'Reb Yehuda or halacha k'Reb Shimon. So then, in that case, well, maybe we don't care what his intention is. Maybe the halacha is like Reb Yehuda, and it's still aser because the davar she'eino miskaven is also going to Reb Yehuda. Or maybe the halacha is like Reb Shimon, and even if he's doing it for his own lanaz atzmo, the halacha could still be like Reb Shimon. Now, although we said before that as a general rule, the second Igadah Amri was looking for ways in which, even if it is Asr, maybe we could still find a Heter, this particular line doesn't fit with that rule. It's unclear exactly why the Gemara sort of flip-flops like that. Perhaps it's because they want to be able to find a way to have several steps within each side. And if they had done it the other way, it would have ended. The Gemara says, maybe the halacha is like Reb Shimon, and therefore it's mutter. Right, and that's sort of like the new step over here. But now the Gemara goes back to taking the usher side of things. The imtim salam halacha to Reb Yehuda, and if you'll say the halacha is Reb Yehuda, and really it's davar she'eino miskaven, but it's usher. So even though your intention is not to do the actual isser act, however, we pass in like Reb Yehuda that davar she'eino miskaven is usher. However, is it destructive? Is it a destructive act? And if it's a destructive act, then when you do a destructive act, we know that even though a beautiful davashen miskavin is asr, but doing a destructive act is mutter. Because of the fact that it's destructive. Things were not done in a destructive fashion in the Mishkan. And therefore, it's mutter. And then the Gemara brings another step. Vimtim slom mekalkal b'chaburahu. And now again, the Gemara sort of deviates from its rule. Even if people tell me that it's mekalkal b'chaburah and it should be mutter, still is another potential step. The mekalkal, in the case in the halacha of mekalkal, halacha k'Reb Yehuda or halacha k'Reb Shimon. As we mentioned before, the Mekalkel Rabbi Shimon holds is Chayav, and Rabbi Yehuda holds is Pater. Let's take a look at Rashi now to elucidate the steps we just read. Rashi says, V'dam memela ka have, about 12 lines up from the bottom of Rashi. Maybe closer to 10 lines up, excuse me. V'dam memela kohave. Hu eno miskavin lotzio. He didn't have in mind to take the blood out. Aval hu yotze. But it does come out. V'ninses. Chabur nasis shlova kavana. And it, as a result of that, it comes out that a wound was done unintentionally. So halach k'Reb Yehuda b'davar she'eino miskavin. Rashi says that maybe passing like Reb Yehuda in a matter of davar she'eino miskavin. Rishon Misakin Huva Aser, and Rashi points out, and of course it would have to be Misakin in order to make it Aser, but maybe it would be Aser if we hold like Rabbi Yehuda by Davar She'eino Miskaven, or Halacha K'Reb Shimon, the Davar She'eino Miskaven Mutter. The Imtim Salom Halacha K'Reb Yehuda. And if you would say that the Halacha K'Reb Yehuda and Davar She'eino Miskaven is Aser, Kilkul Hu, maybe it's still a destructive act of Mutter. Otikin Huva Aser. or perhaps it is in fact done in a constructive way, and then it would still potentially be aser. Vafilu im kilkulhu, and even if it was a kilkul, yesh linso tzad iser. There is to find a potential aser side. Im bedavar she'ein miskavin, svir lan kreb Yehuda, and this is the Gemara's last step. Even if in the world of davar she'ein miskavin, we hold a kreb Yehuda and it's aser, uvu mekalko b'chabur svir lan kreb Shimon, techayev. And in mekalko b'chabur, in the case of a destructive act, in the world of if the action you're doing is a wound, a person's creating a wound and it's being done destructively, which presumably most wounds are done destructively. Of course, if a doctor needs to create an incision in order to perhaps do surgery or in order to stitch up a wound, that might be a constructive chabura. But generally, chaburas that are created in a destructive fashion. The hamrinan that we say in Masechta Shabbos, kol hamekalkel and peturin, chutz mechobel maver. Every case of mekalkel is pater. Every case of a destructive act is pater, except for when a person creates a wound and lights a fire. V'ukim l'krib Shimon, we establish that statement as being according to Reb Shimon b'Perakah Oreg, in Perakah Oreg in Masechta Shabbos. And it's important to point out that the only way we could find any tzad iser in this world of dam chavuri mechber is if we hold both, assuming his intention is not actually to create the wound. So we're talking about something which is a davar she'ein miskavein. The only way we could find a tzad iser is if, first of all, we pass on like Rabbi Yehuda by davar she'ein miskavein, and davar she'ein miskavein is aser. You know, Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon argue by davar she'ein miskavein, so davar she'ein miskavein would have to be aser. And additionally, we would then have to pass on like Rabbi Shimon that holds mekalkel b'chabur is chayev. That's the only way mekalkel b'chabur is going to make a difference in our case. In theory, if we viewed this as being a case of misaking, of being a constructive act, which is certainly not so hard to make such an argument, right? A person is doing it to have kids, and it's not possible to continue to be with his wife in the future if he doesn't do this first. So it isn't out of the question that we could view it as a constructive act, but assuming we view it as a destructive act, and it is in fact a davar she'ein miskavein, one would have to pass on like Rabbi Yehuda by one and like Rabbi Shimon by the other, which is generally a somewhat inconsistent way of paskening. It's almost like shopping around for the right psak. Of course, in this case, you're doing it to shop around in order to find an iser. But the Gemara in this case is doing it sort of for Topol's sake, for the sake of discussion. And of course, there are in fact poskim, and when I say poskim, I'm actually referring to an Amora by the name of Shmuel, who do paskin like Rabbi Yehuda by one and like Rabbi Shimon by the other. So for somebody like that to so to speak shop around is of course okay, and he does in fact paskin like that in Masechta Shabbos, so it's just good to bear that in mind. And in theory, according to Shmuel, you might have a bigger problem in terms of finding a heter for the chazon kala to be together for the first time on Shabbos. This ends the intin salomars that the Gemara discusses. The Gemara now is going to discuss, do we know from anywhere else, other people, one of the people we're actually going to discuss is Shmuel, that we just mentioned. Do we know from them how we paskin in general? How do they in fact hold? We discussed all the various tzadim, all the various sides to the argument. Now we're going to see what in fact is the halacha. So we bypassed a couple of Rashi's, but I think it's worth moving on at this point. The Gemara on the top line of Avam Adala says, Vivei Rav, in the house of Rav, Amri, they would say, Rav Shari Ushmuel Aser, that Rav held it was Mutter for Chazon Kala to be together for the first time on Shabbos, and Shmuel held it was Aser. Benaharda Amri, however, in the town of Naharda, Amri, they said, Rav Aser Shmuel Shari. The Rav held it was Aser and Shmuel held it was Mutter. It seems like there was some dispute over what exactly Rav and Shmuel's own opinions were. Omer Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak, and Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak says, Simnaich, and your mnemonic device, in order to remember who holds what. In other words, who held, the Rav held Asur and Shmuel held Mutter, and who held vice versa. Elu Mikil and Asman, the Elu Mikil and Asman. Each town, or each group, each school of thought was lining up the opinions in such a way that they were going to end up passing like the one who held it was Mutter. In other words, Bei Rav is of course the house of Rav, held that Rav was the one who had said it was Mutter. And Nahada, which is the town that Shmuel was the head of, held that Shmuel was the one who held it was Mutter. So just a cute little thing that they each held their Rav was the one who mattered in this case. Okay, well, let's get into the meat and potatoes of Da'av Vav Amud Aleph, which gets very heavily into the sugya of Darshei Miskavim, Psik Resha, and Nichole. Just a little background, we mentioned the concept of Darshei Miskavim, that an act done unintentionally on Shabbos is a machlokas of Shun Rabbi Yehuda, whether it's Mutter, whether it's Asur. However, we're going to see that if it's a Psik Resha, if it's an unintentional act, however it's an unintentional act which is guaranteed to result in a malacha, that might change the equation a little bit. And further, we're going to see that if it is a guaranteed resulting result in a malacha, however it's a guaranteed result which the doer of the act doesn't particularly care about, that may further change the equation. Let's take a look at the Gemara. The Gemara says, the Gemara asks the following question. Rav Shari. The Gemara wants to know, does Rav in fact matter? Right? We know that the Bei Rav said that Rav matters, but Rav never mattered it. V'halma Rav Simi Bar Chizkiya Mishmei de Rav. Rav Simi Bar Chizkiya said in the name of Rav, Chai Misuchraya de Nezaisa. We have the statement of Rav that a case of a Misuchraya of Nezaisa, and for translation's sake, we'll check Rashi in just a minute. Asur lahaduka biyumatava. It's asur to stuff it, or to sort of fix it, on yamtiv. So what is misachraya din azaisa? Rashi tells us. Let's first look at Virav Shari Rashi. That is the third narrow line of Rashi, Virav Shari. Bitnia, we read that sort of in a wonder. Alma davreshein miskavin mutter sfirale. Therefore, we see that Rav holds davreshein miskavin is mutter, and yet we're going to quote a statement of Rav, which is that davreshein miskavin is aser. Rashi says mizuchray din azay. So, what exactly was the case here? Stemas nekev gigas. It is the opening of a, or I should say the closure of a spigot on a barrel, shemotzien hashecha derech hanekev, that they would remove the beer, meaning it's essentially a keg, and they would remove the beer by way of this spigot, and then they would stuff it up with rags in order to prevent the beer from coming out. It wasn't like a spigot where you have a little like a faucet with a knob that you can turn on and off. Rather, it was just a hole, and the beer would, of course, come out, unless you stuffed it up with some kind of a rag. So, asher lahaduka was asher to stuff it up and to put those rags in. Rashi says, mishum schita. You miss Rashi, although it's only two words, is perhaps of the most key Rashis on the page. Rashi says, because of squeezing. There's a concern with squeezing a rag and wringing it out so that liquid comes out on Shabbos. However, we're going to see in Tosfos that it's not so simple exactly whether that's true by all cases, perhaps it's only in cases where there's water involved. What exactly is schita, we're going to see a little bit more clearly soon. In any event, in terms of the simple reading of the Gemara, one is not allowed to squeeze things on Shabbos, and Rav says, therefore, one is not allowed to stuff up this keg of beer, the hole in this keg of beer, with rags, because stuffing up with rags, the rags are going to absorb the beer, and one is inevitably going to come to squeeze out the rags to some extent when he pushes the rags back into the barrel. So the Gemara answers, so again, sorry, just to clarify, So it seems pretty clear that although this is a Darshei Nisgavin, a person doesn't necessarily want to cause any liquid to get squeezed out of the rags. Nevertheless, right, it is a possibility that will happen. And therefore, Davashein Miskavin, although it's not your intent is just to stuff the hole up with rags, because the squeezing may occur as a result of your action, you are going to be chayiv. And therefore, Rav says you're not allowed to do it on Yom Tov. And presumably in this instance, Yom Tov and Shabbos are no different. So how could it be that Rav held that, like Rav Shimon, that Davashein Miskavin is mutter? So the Gemara answer is, Bahu, in this type of a case, Afila Rav Shimon Moda. Even Rav Shimon, who is sort of the protagonist of the opinion, the ultimate proponent of the Shita, that Davashein Miskavin is mutter, he himself never said Davashein Miskavin was mutter in this case. Why? The Abaye v'Rava, the Amitavayu, Abaye and Rava, holy Abaye and Rava said that they both said, Moda Rav Shimon v'psik reshe v'lo yamos. Rav Shimon is Moda in a case of where you cut off its head and it won't die. What exactly does that mean, it cut off its head and it won't die? So, essentially, what happens by psik reshe is that it's a Darash Ein Miskavein where the result is guaranteed. A typical Darash Ein Miskavein, the textbook case of Darash Ein Miskavein, is where a person drags a bench across a yard, and the bench may drag up dirt and create a furrow, create a hole, which would be an issur of digging on Shabbos. But the bench also may not drag up any dirt. It may slide over the surface of the land without creating any grooves at all. That's a Davar Shein Miskavein. Rav Shimon holds its mutter, Rav Yehuda holds its asur. Now let us say that it was an extraordinarily heavy bench, and there was no way that dragging this bench across the yard was going to do anything other than create furrows. It was guaranteed. You wouldn't need a benchologist to tell you that in that case, dirt was going to be dragged up. So in that case, that's what we would call a psik resha. The terminology of psik resha comes from a case, which seems a little bit strange. I guess children used different toys back in the day. Apparently, it was common practice when a chicken was shechted to give the head of the chicken to the children to play with. I can't say I would let my child play with the head of a chicken. However, this is what they did. And the Gemara says, if you cut off the head of a chicken, is it not going to die? In other words, of course your intention may be to procure the head of the chicken in order to give it as a toy to the child to play with. But the chicken is most definitely going to die once that head is removed. And therefore the terminology comes from the idea that although it may be a Devar Shein Miskavein, an unintentional result of your action, Psik Reshev Lo Yamos, if you cut off its head, will it not die? Of course it will. And when you cut off its head, it will die. You will have done a malacha. And therefore, in such a case of Davashim Miskavin, if it's what we call a psik resha, Rav Shimon would agree that it's mutter. This is an exception to Rav Shimon's general opinion that Davashim Miskavin is mutter. And by a psik resha, Rav Shimon would say that it's usser. It's not allowed. And since this case that we're quoting Rav as having said that one is not allowed to stuff up rags into the hole of the barrel on Shabbos, that's because in that case, it's guaranteed that the rags are going to get squeezed out. It's a psik resha, and therefore that's the reason, although it's a Davar Shein Miskavein, nevertheless, even Rav Shimon would agree that it's mutter. And therefore, we can maintain Rav's position, according to the Bei Rav, the Rav held it was mutter because he holds Davar Shein Miskavein as mutter. Now Tosis is going to get into, we can see that on the left there's a monster Tosis staring at us, looking to intimidate us, and we're going to try and tackle at least bits and pieces of it, even if we don't have time to read through the entire thing. And that Tosis is going to try and interpret what exactly is the case of Misacharei Demezaisa, and what is the potential Issur on Shabbos. Apparently there are various schools of thought as to whether or not Rashi's position is right, or perhaps there's another way of explaining what exactly the Issur is on Shabbos in that case. Before we come back to that, however, let us take a look at the rest of the Gemara. The Gemara says, what do you mean? V'homer Rav Chiya bar Ashi, Omer Rav, halacha k'Rav Yehuda. Rav Chanan bar Ami, Omer Shmuel, halacha k'Rav Shimon. In other words, it's wonderful that we have the ability, potentially, to explain Rav according to Rav Shimon. But ultimately we have a statement in the name of Rav that the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda. Rav Chiya bar Av and Nasim Lablo Gavri, Rav Amar halacha k'Rav Yehuda, Shmuel Amar halacha k'Rav Shimon. Okay, and there was another version that quoted Rav and Shmuel directly without any kind of an intermediate step, which is of course a little bit better. So now the Bei Rav is in real hot water, because they said that Rav holds its mother and Shmuel holds its aser. However, Rav seems to hold like Rabbi Yehuda, the Dovah Shein Miskave, and its aser. And Shmuel seems to hold like Rav Shimon, that Dovah Shein Miskave is mutter. So how could Rav say mutter and Shmuel say aser? It should be the other way around. So the Gemara answer is, La'olam Rav ki Rabbi Yehuda svirle. Really, Rav holds like Rabbi Yehuda. Lahach lishna de omar dam miskid pakid. According to the Lashon, and this is where the two Lashonos that we mentioned previously are very important. According to the Lashon that said, we view the dam as being a reservoir simply waiting to be released, we'll say that it's mekalkel. Remember, we had all sorts of options in each Lashon, how to say mutter and how to say aser. So in the first Lashon of Dam Mifkid Pakad, we'll say it's Mekalkel, it's destructive act, Eitzal HaPesach, regarding the creation of the door, because again, that was the potential problem in a world where it's just a reservoir and the blood is just being released. The problem is, well, maybe you're creating the door in your building. We'll say, yeah, but it's Mekalkel, it's a destructive act. You're creating a door sort of by banging a hole in a wall with a sledgehammer. That's not a constructive creation of a door. It's just, now there's a way to go in and out, theoretically, because there's a hole in the wall that you created with your sledgehammer. But of course, that's not a constructive act. And we'll say we view that the same way here, and therefore, even though the Yehulik Rabbi Yehuda, the Dovashein Miskavein, is Aser, but still it's Mekalkel, and therefore it's Mutter. Destructive acts were not the way that was done in the Mishkan, and therefore it's Mutter. Lahach Lishna da Omar Dam Chaburi Machber. However, according to the Lashon, according to the way of understanding it, that we view it as a wound, and the problem is that of course you're creating a wound. We'll say mekalkel b'chaburu. Well, again, we'll say it's a destructive action, and since you're doing it in a destructive action, in a destructive way, that's mutter, and therefore Rav can successfully hold like Rabbi Yehuda. Seemingly problematic, however, is the fact that the Gemara does not create any defense for the Bei Rav's take on Shmuel's opinion. Shmuel held it was Aser, and yet Shmuel seems to pass him like Rav Shimon, who holds Dovah Shein Miskavein is Mutter. And in a certain sense, that's even a stronger question, because once you hold the Dovah Shein Miskavein is Mutter, unless it's not a Dovah Shein Miskavein, it's absolutely going to be Mutter, regardless of what other Aser factors may be involved. Let's take a look at Rashi, and then we'll see Tosis should help us understand that last problem. Rashi says, Halacha k'Rav Yehuda be'in miskavin, below Gavri, without people, below Amorai, Aliva de Rav, Aliva de Shmuel, without Amoraim who were quoting it in the name of Rav and in the name of Shmuel, Ela Rav and Shmuel Gufai, rather Rav and Shmuel themselves were the ones who said it. In other words, it wasn't another Amora saying what Rav's opinion was. We had sort of an eyewitness account that Rav and Shmuel themselves said this. According to the Lashon that says, Dam Mifkid Pakid, and the Isser is because of the fact that you're creating a doorway, and in the case of a destructive act, Rabbi Yehuda would agree that it is in fact Mutter. And similarly, according to the Lashon that it was Chabur Mechbar, we'll say Mekalkel B'Chaburahu. Rashi says Mekalkel B'Chaburahu. V'Rav Sabar L'Krav Yehuda, Af Mekalkel B'Chaburah L'Kula. And Rav will agree with Rabbi Yehuda even by gives him Mekalkel B'Chaburah. Even though it's a Chabur, still will say that he holds like Rabbi Yehuda in terms of their machlokas, the makalko is mutter. The kapater bar Yehuda, because Rabbi Yehuda pater is a case of makalko b'chabura. Okay, so let's hold it there in the Gemara. Let's just take a look at the second to bottom tosis on the page, which is going to help us understand what exactly is going on in terms of the Gemara's answer for the question on Shmuel. We answered the question on Rav. What about the fact that Shmuel seemingly holds the Rav Shimon that the Davar Shem Miskavin is mutter, and yet the Bei Rav said Shmuel holds that a Chazan and Kala being together on the first, for the first time on Shabbos is usher. Does Shmuel hold the Rav Shimon or not? So Tosfos says, the Olam Rav Rav Yehuda Sfir Lei V'chule, L'Shmuel Nami Ika L'Shniye, the Olam Rav Shimon Sfir Lei. Really, for Shmuel, they also could have given an answer that he holds the Rav Shimon. According to the first lashon of Nifkid Paked, we could have said that he actually does is doing it for the Pesach, and therefore it's not a Davar Shein Miskavin at all. And therefore, even though he holds the Rav Shimon, the Davar Shein Miskavin is mutter, that would not qualify as a case of Davar Shein Miskavin. And according to that way of understanding it, that it's actually creating a wound, we'll again say it's not a davar shemis kavin, it's the dam utzarach. And so, although there was an answer they could have given for Shmuel, they didn't feel any need to address it because it was somewhat obvious. Understanding how and when the Gemara chooses to address certain questions and chooses not to address others because they felt the answer was perhaps quote unquote obvious is a very hard and subtle thing, and it's for that reason, we need the guidance of the Rishonim to explain to us when it's legitimate to ask a question and when we can simply say, the Gemara knew of this question but chose not to answer because they had this answer sort of in their back pocket that they could have given. Perhaps the Gemara feels that we weren't working with all the various steps in that Lashon. We felt it basically boiled down to a question of Davar Shein Miskavin, Mutter or Aser. And once we're willing to borrow from other of the various steps of that flowchart of the Imtin Salomars that we said on Hamad Beis, if we're willing to borrow from those for Rav, presumably we can borrow for them for Shmuel as well. And the Gemara didn't feel the need to spell out how that's going to help us answer the question. Just one potential understanding of why Tosfos feels the Gemara didn't need to spell that out in Shmuel, but nevertheless had a valid answer. With the time remaining that we have, I'd like to take a look at the monster Tosfos that takes up a large chunk of the page. And line up some of the opinions that there are about what exactly is going on with Schita. Tosfos says, Perish Bekunshus V'chein Rabbeinu Chananel U'Barach. So various Rishonim give the following explanation. Bechad Lishna. The Arach in one lashon, b'chein b'seder tanoim v'amorayim, and another of the svarim that give an explanation in our Gemara, the aser mishum schita, that it's aser mishum schita. And then Rabbi Natan asks the following question on that: v'kashal Rabbi Natan the haschita mishum libun. That schita is because of libun. V'lo shaycha v'shar mashkim. It's not applicable to other drinks. The chol davar hamalach lech asbolo, that anything which gets dirty, that which absorbs it, could go nyayin v'sheicha v'shemen lo shayach libun b'schitaso el adafko b'mayim. In other words, the whole concern with squeezing out an object, with wringing it out and having the liquid fall out of it, and get squeezed out of it, is the fact that if it's water, water takes the dirt with it, and it's essentially when squeezing out the water, one is cleaning that garment or that item, whatever it is. But when one is squeezing out wine or oil or beer or something of that sort, even though the, most of the liquid comes out when the article is squeezed, it leaves a certain residue, a certain dirt in the garment. And in fact, what you have not done is clean it, you've actually gotten it more dirty. And therefore, that was never the concern of schita on Shabbos. Schita, squeezing, was only ever a concern regarding cleaning. But if you're not cleaning it, there's nothing wrong with squeezing at all. it's an interesting to look at the understanding of exactly where it comes from. And even though, you know, we may or may not have grown up, I certainly always was under the impression that any kind of squeezing is always problematic. Tosis is challenging that. Tosis is saying that's only true when it's squeezing which is cleaning. If it's squeezing which is not cleaning, perfectly okay on Shabbos. Tosis then brings a whole horde of Gemaras to prove his point. However, he also has some Gemaras which are slightly troubling with regard to the idea that it's only mayim, it's only water that has chita. So let us take a look, however, at how Tosis himself is going to explain our Gemara. If we'll look at the fourth wide line of Tosis, V'hach Omer Rabbeinu Tam, here Rabbeinu Tam says, D'lecha l'mimer d'asr mishum mefarik. Oh, excuse me. So we can't say that the Isser is because of mefarik. Now, what exactly mefarik is the idea of squeezing, but squeezing for the sake of removing something. In other words, if a person has grapes in a press or olives in a press, to squeeze them to remove the grape juice or the olive oil, that's mefarik, which is another version of shechita, which would of course not only apply to water, it would apply to anything in which you want to remove the item. However, in our case, Rabbi Natan says you can't use that explanation either, because in our case, the liquid that's getting wrung out from the rag is falling on the floor and going to waste. And certainly your goal is not to be mefarik in order to get it, to have it. So how exactly is Rabbeinu Tam going to explain our Gemara? And this is where things get a little sticky. No pun intended. Rabbeinu Tam then says, Afagav dahave psik resha, even though it's a psik resha. In other words, granted the liquid is going to waste and it's falling on the floor and no use is coming of it, but it's guaranteed to happen. And we said that Reb Shimon holds that a davar shein miskaven, which is guaranteed to happen, is going to be aser. So why can't we say that our case is a case of mefarik? Granted, we ruled out shechita regarding libun, shechita of cleaning, because that's not even relevant. It's not even a malacha when you're dealing with a non-water liquid. But when it comes to mefarik, granted the end result is not something you really want, and you're not doing it in order to get the liquid, but it's guaranteed to happen. A malacha is happening. Therefore, why can't we say that that's pshat in our Gemara? So Tosa says, V'chein perish baruch, this is a very, very key line. Anytime you have a psik resha, which is not nichole, it's mutter. In other words, if you're a sort of ambivalent, if the result of the usher part of the result of the malacha that you're doing is not relevant to you, you don't really care about it, you don't have any strong feelings about it one way or the other, that's a case which we say is psik resha delo nichole. It's a psik resha that that a person doesn't want. Why should that matter? So one idea we can put out and see if it makes sense throughout Tosfos, as we see more of it, is that when a person does a davar shein miskaven, he's not intending to do a malacha of Shabbos. He's not intending to do anything which is asur at all. And therefore, if he does it, we can excuse him from being asar on Shabbos. And in fact, the davar shein miskaven, if a little extra credit reading, Tosfos in the bottom of Hayam and Beis, the last in Tim Salomar Tosfos, discusses the idea that a davar shein miskaven, according to Reb Shimon, an unintentional act could be something which is mutter even by non-Shabbos cases. If a person unintentionally creates kelayim, for example, plants grapes and another breed of fruit too close to each other. Fields are too close, and a graft occurs. If a person does it unintentionally, a person may not be chayav. He probably can't eat the graft, but he may be exempt from any punishment on account of that act that he did. And perhaps going to Rav Shimon is mutter to do it in the first place, if that's not your goal, if that's not your point. You can't do it in the first place in order to have it happen, but if you had some reason why you had to have the fields in such close proximity, one might be able to do that in the first place. So now the Aruch is saying that even if it's a psik ratio, even if it's guaranteed to happen, but it's lo nicholei, how does that have to do with davar shein miskaven? The answer is that if it's a psik ratio, if it's guaranteed to happen, you can no longer claim sort of ignorance. There's no longer any plausible deniability. I was at a hotel for Hanukkah, and I wanted to light Hanukkah licht in my hotel room, but I wasn't sure if the hotel would be okay with it. And my goal was not so much that they should give me permission and I should go and ask them and so on and so forth. My goal was plausible deniability. I wanted to make sure that if they did find out that I was lighting in my room, that I could legitimately claim I thought it was okay. Even if it turns out that it's not, I wanted to make sure that, first of all, I wasn't intending for them to find out, and second of all, that if they did find out, it wouldn't be any kind of a chilul Hashem. If they would look at me when I said I thought it was okay with a look of doubt in their eyes, as if to say, let's be honest, who are you kidding? You knew that we would have a problem with you letting candles in your room. That would be a lack of plausible deniability. And similarly here, perhaps you can say that sick ratio below yomos, so you're cutting off the head of a chicken, and your goal is to give the head of the chicken to the child to play with. However, you know when you cut off the head of that chicken that the chicken is going to die. Call a spade. You're killing a chicken when you do that. No, I'm just procuring a toy for my child to play with. That excuse is not going to fly. However, let us say that it's a psik resha, d'lo nicholei, an unintended result which was guaranteed to happen that you had no strong feelings about. Let us say in the case of the chicken, you have no want for that chicken to be shechted. Let us say, for example, that the knife you're using to cut off the head of the chicken is not a knife which is kosher for shechita, and therefore you're not going to be able to eat the chicken, and the chicken is just going to be wasted. No one can argue that you want that result. Yes, you certainly will admit to us, I know the chicken is going to die when I cut his head off. However, you don't really care. Perhaps if you don't really care, that's not a case that Reb Shimon ever said is usher. In that case, the original heter of Davar Shein Miskaven that Reb Shimon gave should still apply. That is the opinion of the Aruch. And Tosis himself does not really seem to ascribe to it. Because although if Tosis initially quotes a proof that the Aruch himself brings from various Gemaras, Tosfos takes issue with that. And Tosfos says, let's just look at the key line here. One key line, let's just take a look at it. Venir Luri, the first written line is Venir Luri. Venir Luri de lo kashamidi, de ikulanera de asr lischot bishar mashke mishum liban kimo b'mayim. That it is indeed asr to wring things out with other liquids in addition to with water, and not so much so that a person is going to be not allowed to do something because of a concern that shechita might occur, but to go ahead and to wring something out, if a person asks, am I allowed to do that, we would say even if it's not water that's absorbed, but rather wine, we would still say a person is not allowed to do that. And if so, in our Gemara, if a person asks, am I allowed to stuff these cloths into this hole in the barrel, schit is definitely going to occur. And even though it's not water, it is still something which we're concerned about some amount of cleaning occurring. Even if it's not a cleansing process which you necessarily care about, we're still going to say it's aser. Which seems to put Tosfos clearly in the camp opposed to the Aruch. He seems to hold that even though it's lo nichale, nevertheless, still a psik resha is a psik resha, and it's still aser. And the rest of Tosfos bears this out, that is in fact Tosfos' opinion, and that is how Tosfos says Pshat and Ar Gemara. He later goes on to say Pshat and Ar Gemara that you could also say it's mefarik, because the whole issue we said with mefarik, the idea of squeezing something out to get the liquid out, like with a grape or an olive, squeezing it to get the juices out, the whole issue we had with that was only that it's lo nichole. But Tosfos doesn't seem to feel that lo nichole is any kind of a difference, and if it's a psik resha, if it's an absolute guaranteed result, it's still aser. So it comes out that a very, very fundamental machlokas that's relevant to all of Hilchos Shabbos comes out in from our sugya, that Reb Shimon holds davar she'ein miskaven is mutter. However, if it's a psik resha, it's aser. But what if it's a psik resha that I really don't have any feeling about? I really don't care about. That is a machlokas rishonim, Tosfos in the Aruch. Doesn't matter whether or not you care. And just to give one, although there are many, one example of how this is practically applicable on a regular basis, every Shabbos. If a person opens his fridge, and every time he opens the fridge, the light goes on. So that's a psik resha. It's a davar she'ein miskaven. My goal is not to turn the light on. My goal is I'm not flicking the switch to turn the light on. Rather, I'm opening a fridge to get something out of the fridge. I would rather the light would stop working every Shabbos so that I could get the things out of the fridge. And in fact, many people do unscrew the light bulb in their fridge or tape the light switch so that the light doesn't go on when the door opens. But what do you mean? It's a psik resha, d'lo nichale. And according to the Aruch, it should be mutter. So, clearly it's applicable. As it happens, aside from the fact that we don't paskin like the Aruch on a regular basis, and we really don't usually use the idea of lo nichole as a heter, additionally, it's possible that in the case of the fridge, the fact that the light goes on is not considered lo nichole. How exactly we understand the definition of lo nichole, of something that a person doesn't want, is unclear. What do you mean you don't want the light to go on? Don't you like that feature in the fridge? Don't you like the fact that the light goes on every Shabbos? Or, excuse me, every time you open the fridge, not on Shabbos, of course. It helps you find things late at night when you open the door to the fridge. So, of course, a person doesn't want to be Mechal Shabbos, but it's still something which you would do as Nichole. What would be interesting is, even according to that definition, if then a person got rid of that feature altogether and took out the light bulb, and unbeknownst to him, somebody else had put the light bulb back in, and then he opened the fridge and it turned on. So of course it was a psik resha, but we could definitely claim that was lo nichole. Perhaps in that case, we could make the argument that he did not do any isser of Hilchos Shabbos, and perhaps he could even close the fridge, even though he now knows that the light will go off, because he has clearly demonstrated that it's lo nichole to him, and he could rely on the Aruch in that case, especially if it's a concern of spoiling food and so on over the course of the rest of Shabbos. With that, we will hold it here for the week. We will continue at the bottom of Vav Amud Aleph, Bezat Hashem, next time we convene. Have a good week, everyone.